Welcome to the podcast, How to Run and Grow Your Solo Patent Practice with Anant Kataria and Fez Wahid of Sagacious IP. This is a one-of-its-kind podcast focused on existing and aspiring solo or small patent practitioners, interviewing successful solo or small patent practitioners and bringing to you proven, actionable insights to start, build, and grow your patent practice. Learn firsthand how to acquire, serve, and retain clients for long-term success. All this while effectively juggling the multiple roles that one has to play as a solo or small patent practitioner. If you run a solo or small patent practice or are planning to start one, whether you're currently in a mid-size or big law firm or coming fresh out of law school, this podcast series will help you learn from the successful ones who have faced and overcome the challenges you are dealing with. So let's get into the podcast with your hosts, Anant Kataria and Fez Wahid.
Welcome to today's episode of How to Run and Grow a Solo Patent Practice. Our guest for today is Mr. Richard Martin of the Martin IP Law Group. Rick is the owner of the Martin IP Law Group and a registered patent attorney from Greater Evansville area, Indiana. He has had a long 25 years career, 5 years out of which have been at the Martin IP Law Group. Rick holds a bachelor's degree in industrial engineering from Purdue University and a JD from Catholic University Columbus School in Washington, D.C. He's worked for many large law firms in Texas, and one day he decided to return to his Midwestern roots where he founded Martin IP Law Group. Rick has obtained hundreds of patents for inventors in a variety of fields, including semiconductors, broadband antennas, RFID, timing systems, mine safety devices, ranging, oil and gas, and other mechanical and electromechanical devices. And Rick has also worked with clients to acquire product and enforce trademarks, copyrights, and trade secrets. So let's take the conversation forward with Rick and learn from his experiences on how to run and grow a solo patent practice. Hi, Rick. Welcome to our podcast.
Hi, and thanks for having me here today.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us. So, Rick, tell us a bit about the Martin IP Law Group and, more importantly, your story before you founded the Martin IP Law Group.
Okay. Probably the best place to start would be more or less back in the beginning. I actually, while I attended law school at Catholic University, I did that as part of the evening program. So I worked as a patent examiner full-time at the patent office for the first, 2.5, 3 years of law school there, and did my law school at night. After about, 2.5 years of that, I got a job offer and went to work for a law firm in D.C. So I left the patent office, switched to the other side to prosecute patent applications for this firm. I had passed the patent agent exam by that time and began working for them. It was a Houston, Texas-based firm within their D.C. office. Worked there through law school, and at the time when I graduated, they moved me to their Houston office where I worked for several years before transferring to another large firm in Austin, Texas. After about a year with that firm in Austin, the dynamics and the whole culture of the firm changed dramatically over the course of just the 1 year that I spent there. And that kind of motivated me or spurred me to the decision that I didn't want to work at a big firm anymore. I didn't want to work for someone else anymore. I wanted a situation where I had more control over my work life, my home life, my career, the cases I wanted to take, and the work that I wanted to do. I was working 70 plus hours a week, filling somebody else's pocket, and I just didn't want to do that anymore. I wanted to kind of do my own thing. That's when I moved back here to Indiana, where I actually went into practice with my dad, doing more of a general practice type business. So I was in practice with him for 20 years. He just retired at the end of last year. I continued to do some IP work, and it grew and grew and grew, but I did a little bit of everything else as well for several years. I did some, criminal defense work, some family law, some civil litigation, generally what people refer to as door law. If it came in the door, we did it. And you know, after several years of that, you know, my patent practice, my IP practice was growing slowly, but I never had the impression that there was enough of that work in this area to keep me busy. So I never really pursued specializing again, but I had a few people convince me about, oh, 5-6 years ago that there was enough and that was something that was worth pursuing. And so I started to do that about 5 years ago. I think it was 2016 or 2015. I spun off Martin IP Law Group from the firm with my dad as a separate, you know, independent entity and started pursuing doing that full time. And like I said, here we are 5 years later. You know, we're growing every year, and there's more than enough work to keep me busy and a few other people employed and busy as well. So it's been a good adventure and looking forward to it continuing to grow.
Well, this is really good, really inspiring story. And you know, all the situations that led you to specialize in IP and then the fact that it's growing after that, that's pretty interesting. I'm sure many of our listeners would take inspiration from what you just shared. And if they're at the fence, they'll probably be able to use this reference and use this experience to take a decision to move forward. So how have you structured your independent practice now?
Well, right now, I'm a sole practitioner, so I'm the only attorney in the practice at the present time. I've got a full-time assistant who wears a lot of hats. She's the receptionist. She's the marketing assistant. She's the intake specialist. She's the office manager. She's the paralegal. She wears a lot of hats. And we're looking, in fact, we had a discussion yesterday about expanding and growing and bringing on some more staff and identifying the things that she would like to offload. We also have a part-time bookkeeper that comes in, you know, once a week just to take care of paying the bills and updating the accounts and things of that nature. And then there's me who handles, you know, the legal work and kind of running the day-to-day operations of the firm. I have also, from a structured point of view, I, you know, from time to time, and it seems to be getting more often than not, the legal work tends to be a bit overwhelming. And in order to give myself enough time to keep up with the management of the practice and growing the business, I've engaged some outside contractors to help me with some of the extra work. I don't have enough work yet that it would justify hiring another full-time attorney. And honestly, even when I get to the point that I do, you know, I'm not so sure that outside contractors aren't a better bet. I've got a couple individual patent agents that I'm doing some work with, and then also, of course, Sagacious IP. I've done some work with them for some contract work and been very pleased with the results there. So that's kind of how we're structured. And like I said, we're hoping to bring on a few more people here in 2021.
Okay, that sounds pretty interesting. And thank you for your kind words about Sagacious. And you mentioned about your assistant, Katie, right? Is
yes.
Katie you're talking about? Yeah, I think she's been really great. Our team has been interacting with her, and I think it's pretty nice that she's handling so many things very nicely at your firm.
Yeah, she's a very valuable member of our firm here. Don't know what I'd do without her. She kind of is the glue that holds it all together.
Okay, great. Yeah, I think this is also very good input. Our listeners would be keen to get such inputs. In the end, this is a real life experience, and you're sharing that having a good assistant who can hold things together, you know, helps you grow. So yeah, thanks for sharing that. So my next question would be around the life or the work-life balance. So how has this life as a solo patent practitioner been different from, you know, working at large firms earlier? You shared a bit about it, but if there's more you'd like to share to kind of bring the contrast and maybe motivate our listeners to think about taking the decision.
Yeah, sure, I'd be happy to. Working for a big firm, at least in the early years, you know, they expect lots of hours out of you. I mean, it wasn't unusual for me to spend 10-12 hours a day at the office. during the week. And, you know, if you didn't show up on Saturday, that was frowned upon as well. So it seems like a lot of the big firms, you know, that one, they're concerned about billing hours. And two, the other concern seems to be just FaceTime in the office, which, in my opinion, neither one are necessarily productive things. You know, from an hourly billing perspective, that's something that I've kind of done away with for the vast majority of the projects that I work on. Every now and then, if it's something that I, you know, don't have a lot of control over the process, we'll do hourly billing. But the vast majority of the things we do, I'll quote a client a flat fee for it, and that's the fee. Whether it takes me, you know, 10 hours or 50 hours to get the project done, that's the client's fee. So that's a benefit to the client, and it's an incentive to me to be more efficient and get the work done in a timely manner. As far as the work-life balance here, like I said, it's totally different than working for a big firm and putting in all the hours and the FaceTime at the office. I've got the flexibility of working when I want to work. My practice is primarily, I'd say, transactional based, you know, patent prosecution, trademark prosecution, you know, acquiring rights, advising clients. So I'm not really controlled by, you know, a court's calendar or anybody's calendar other than my own. So, you know, I find that probably one of the more effective strategies for me that works for me. Again, I come to the office when it's convenient for me to come to the office. One of the things that I discovered early on with the COVID pandemic, you know, we shut the office down and worked from home exclusively for about 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. And Katie was at her home, I was at my home. We would have video conference calls every morning, and then, you know, the phones were directed to her and we'd email back and forth. And honestly, we were able to cover the vast majority of the work that needed to get done in that type of environment. One thing I found that helped me or benefited me through COVID, I would get up and literally I'd wake up about 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning, and I would go downstairs to my office in my house there and just, you know, make my coffee, and I'd immediately start working for, you know, a couple, 3 hours in the morning. And that to me, you know, when everybody else is asleep, you know, I'm fresh, it's quiet, there are no distractions, there are no interruptions. That was a great time for me to sit down and focus and really get done that work that required, you know, intense concentration or focus. So I've kind of, since we've reopened the offices and are more or less back to a regular schedule here as far as the office hours being open, I find that, you know, the thing that works best for me is, you know, kind of to do the same thing I was doing before. I'll get up 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning. I'll work, you know, make my coffee, work for a couple of hours until, you know, 7:30. Then I'll go for a hike. I'll go for a bike ride. I'll go for a walk. I'll get in some exercise there in the morning, shower, have some breakfast, and, you know, get into the office maybe, you know, 9:30, 10 o'clock in the morning with, you know, my workout done, my, you know, couple hours worth of focused effort done for the day, and then ready to tackle some of the other things that maybe don't require that directed and intense focus. So, you know, that seems to work well for me. I've got three teenage daughters, one of which is driving now. So they've got a lot of activities and a lot of things that they're doing, basketball, swim team, marching band. So having the sole practice or being, you know, the owner of my practice allows me the flexibility to be there for their events and to be a part of their life growing up, which, you know, I may not have if I were having to, you know, punch the clock, so to speak, in a big firm.
Well, this is really good. Very good to know. And in fact, I myself am an early riser, and I totally hear when you said, you know, getting up early at 4:30, 5 o'clock, and, you know, this having this opportunity to finish a lot of your high concentration work before others wake up, it's a huge thing. I just dig it. I do that, yeah, too. So I can totally understand. Yeah.
I guess that's one good thing that's maybe come out of this COVID pandemic, is it's changed my philosophy or view on when and how work gets done, and it's been better.
Right. Perfect. My next question would be around. I looked at your website and I saw that there's a very innovative business model there that talks about fractional IP or startup council, and then you have predefined modules or models there. So that was very interesting to me. We also keep thinking in that direction, but I wanted to understand how has that worked out for you? Is that something that's just to get your view on how that came into being, how did you think of getting into that model, and then how is it working out?
Yeah, thanks. That's a very good question here. It's the Fractional IP Council, and again, there aren't very many people out there doing this. I've kind of looked for others out there just to see who's doing what, and a very, very small number of other attorneys out there doing it. Basically, what the bigger picture is, and I've got a handful of clients I've been doing that I've been working with. This model on for probably the last, I'd say the first client I had on this was maybe 5, 6 years ago, and I've brought some others on since then. But the idea is, or the idea sort of came to me. A lot of my clients don't necessarily know what they need or don't understand, IP or how it affects their company and their business and their profitability and the bottom line of their business. This can be, and again, most of these are not your large, multi-million dollar companies, but you get companies that are maybe even 10, 20, $30 million companies. Maybe they have an in-house general counsel. Maybe they don't have in-house counsel at all to kind of guide them and direct them on, IP issues or, general legal issues. And like I said, even if they have an in-house general counsel, a lot of times that in-house general counsel has little or no understanding or knowledge of intellectual property law. So I kind of came up with this program as a way to basically offer the equivalent of an in-house IP counsel to companies that maybe aren't big enough to need or want or afford somebody on staff full time. So, what they get is they get the benefit of an IP attorney and a staff, and actually my full staff. So not only do they get the benefit of having me, but the contractors I work with, Katie, and all of the others that make up our team here to essentially act as their in-house counsel. As part of that, I typically meet with with a client on a regular basis, whether that's monthly, quarterly, or whatever the case may be, depending on their needs, and really kind of sit down and learn their business and understand their business. And we're kind of embedded in their business so that we know what's going on. And instead of waiting for them to come to us with, what they perceive to be an IP issue or an IP problem, we're already there with them in advance, and we can identify those concerns and identify those IP issues and problems, and be more proactive in our approach with our clients. And like I said, the clients that I've had on this plan, I think really appreciate it. They understand how it benefits their company. The other part of it is instead, the other benefit to the client that I think that they really appreciate is, this is all done on a flat monthly fee basis. So once I've sat down with a client and understand what their needs are, we'll put together a plan and a program that's tailored to their needs, and it'll have a flat monthly fee price associated with it so that they can better plan and budget for their expenses.
This is really interesting. So let's say if I am such a company with, let's say, $10 to $20 million of revenue, most of my time goes focusing on my business, bringing in more business and delivering that business. I mean, delivering that work or products that I need to ship out. And then I have a legal counsel, maybe a full-time one, or I have an off counsel that I work with, and I'm not concerned about IP at all. But only, let's say, when someone educates me on how I can leverage IP or how I could be facing issues going forward if I'm not focusing on IP. If at that time I get a solution like yours where I have a counsel, a trusted counsel, I mean, I get a trusted counsel, IP counsel, who works with me and kind of takes ownership of the IP issues, is not very expensive because it's not someone whom I'm hiring full time. At the same time, it's predictable because, as you mentioned, it's a fixed monthly cost. I think that's a very good situation for me to be in.
Yeah, so. It's referred to as fractional IP counsel because it's exactly that. You're sharing me with other people, so you get a fraction of my time for a fraction of the cost of what it would be to have somebody in house full time. And again, this covers all aspects of IP: patents, trademarks, copyrights, trade secrets. You know, we address all of those issues and get involved in all of those with our clients. So, it's a good model. And again, it's a less expensive model for a client that maybe doesn't have a big R&D department and is not doing a lot of patenting there, but they still have products. They still have, brands that they need to protect, or, creations that they protect with copyrights. It's still a good model, even for somebody that's not what you would consider maybe a tech-based business.
Got it. Yeah, this is pretty interesting. I think this is something that I'm sure you're doing your bit in promoting it, but it's pretty interesting. And if promoted well, I think this could be acceptable very well outside in the market.
Yeah, we just, like I said, we just launched our new website a month or two ago. So the some of that I tried to sit down. I know we've got a couple different plans listed there. We've got our launch plan. We've got our Guardian plan. We've got the enterprise plan. Most of the clients that I currently have, existing clients, are on the enterprise plan, a couple on the launch plan. But the Guardian plan was one that, we kind of looked at that kind of addresses the situation I just talked about, a company that's not so tech oriented, but has some brands or some products that are maybe covered by design patents or covered by trademarks or trade dress that would be protected. And that's kind of we sat down and spent a little time thinking what are some good divisions to create here, and that's kind of what we came up with.
That's pretty cool. Great. So moving on to the next question. This one is about the way you distribute your effort as a sole practitioner. So what we've realized talking to our other customers and working with them is that you are responsible for bringing in business or bringing in work, and at the same time ensuring that it's delivered and completed on time. And these are two roles which are different from each other, very different from each other, and then each of them requires attention and time and effort and resources. So how do you take care of this aspect, and how do you basically work towards bringing in this new work, a continuous incoming inflow of work?
Thanks. That's a very good question, and it's something maybe that I don't always do such a great job at, by my own admission here. It's one of those things where you've got to learn to give up some control and learn to onboard other people to share these tasks with, and to ultimately train and hand over a lot of these tasks to. And it, like I said, it's a tough thing to do, particularly for most attorneys, because most attorneys believe that, well, nobody can do this job as good as I can. Well, I find that, I can, if I can train somebody to do it the way I like to have it done, and, maybe they can do it better than me. And that's been kind of one of the things I've been looking for, is, bring in people that are specialists to do this role or that role, and that can do it better than I can. I look at my primary job being the owner of this business. My primary job is to operate and grow the business. So you know, I've started handing off some of the legal work. And again, I say handing off, I still review everything. I still go over everything and make sure that it's, you know, up to my standards before anything gets filed. But a lot of the legal work, I'm finding good qualified contractors to work with me to do sort of the heavy lifting. You know, like I said, Sagacious is one of those partners, and then I rely on them to do responses to office actions, draft applications for me, things along those lines. And that frees me up to do what I think is the more important role for me here, is to, again, interact and interface with the clients, meet their needs, or make sure their needs are being met, and to also expand and offer our services to other clients that may be needing those services.
Right, right. And I totally agree when you say, you know, it's about, yeah, of course, every attorney thinks that, you know, they do this thing best and probably others can't do it as good. But I think, again, a mark of a good attorney who's serving the customers is also that he should be able to train more people to be able to deliver, let's say, 80% of what he was doing, and he can spend 20% on top of it to finalize stuff, make sure it's at the same quality, but still focus on the big picture of serving the customer well. So I think, yeah, that's really good. And I think it's eventually adding more value to the customers that you serve. They get more face time with you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, my ultimate goal in the next few years really is to build a team around us to where my primary role is, you know, essentially meeting with the client and doing a lot of the big picture strategy and planning, and that we've got, you know, other staff members here that can then execute on whatever plan that I'm able to craft with the client.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a great vision to have, and, you know, working towards. My next question is about, you know, our listeners, at times, based on the specific examples that you've experienced, maybe a client that was very easy to bring on board, or a client that was very hard to bring on board, or any specific instances that kind of end up shaping the way we look at our practice or we build our practice. So if there are any such examples that kind of strike out in your head, it would be very interesting for our listeners to hear about.
Off the top of my head, I can't think of any good specific examples. I would say that the vast majority of our clients come through referrals, or at least of our, I'd say, our larger clients, you know, the repeat business clients, the corporate clients, the ones that are good fits for the fractional IP council. Almost all of those have come from, you know, referrals, whether that's from other attorneys or whether that's from just, you know, other people in the community or other people that I have, you know, come across or come in contact with over the years. Maybe actually a good, you know, there are other things we do, I think, that help bring on clients. You know, we get a fair amount just of traffic from our website. That tends to be more sort of the individual inventors, the individual client that, you know, did a Google search and you know, we came up, you know, as you know, near the top, or, and then once they went to our website, decided to give us a call. Just a lot of networking opportunities. Another, actually, I do have probably one interesting example of where I acquired a client that is somewhat unusual. I guess a legal marketing group that I'm a member of, you know, called Great Legal Marketing. They're based out of Arlington, Virginia. You know, they put on events every so often that I go to and attend and interact with other attorneys that are members. And about a year ago, I got a call from one of the members there. Actually, she had ended up, I think she forgot that we had met at one of their events. But she had ended up on our email list, and we do a monthly newsletter to all of our email list. And, you know, so we've got this newsletter that she's receiving once a month and reading the content and apparently enjoying the content and finding it helpful and useful. About a year ago, she called me, and she is in New York and has a corporate practice, basically for clients up there, and had previously had an associate working for her doing trademark work for her corporate clients. That associate left, went to another firm, and rather than bring on another associate, train another associate that may leave, or rather than maybe farm it out to a local firm that may also poach her corporate clients, she reached out to me, being half a country away, or half of the U.S. away, and asked if I would want to serve all of her clients' IP needs. And we've established a good working relationship that's been pretty consistent, and a pretty good volume of work over the last year, just meeting the needs of her corporate clients, meeting their IP needs.
Well, this is really interesting. I've had on some of the other podcasts, we've also got a similar advice of networking with lawyers who are practicing in other areas. And I think when you talk about legal marketing group, is that what it's called? Legal marketing group?
It's called Great Legal Marketing. Yeah.
Great Legal Marketing. Okay. So that sounds like a good platform for that kind of collaboration opportunities to come up. Yeah. That's a very interesting example.
Well, yeah, that they do provide a lot of very useful information and help with marketing for your firm, which obviously is the first step to growing getting more clients in the door. So it's been very helpful in that regard too. The other thing I would mention too, with the IP practice, that's kind of different than any other areas of the law, is it's a federally based practice. So this attorney in New York was able to contract with me, or work with me here in Indiana, to meet her clients, her New York clients' needs, because the work that I do is federally based. So, the other, I'd say, misconception I had early on about, is there enough IP work in my area to keep me busy? Well, yeah, there is. But over and above that, I have clients in Florida, California, New York, all basically spread out all over the country from various contacts that I've made in various areas. So, almost everything I do is federally based. So, the clients don't have to be local, and particularly with, everything going online as much as it has with the COVID pandemic here, it's getting easier and easier, and clients are getting more and more comfortable with working with somebody that they don't really see face to face on a regular basis, if ever.
Right. Yeah. That's very interesting. Very interesting. And while we were talking, I just looked at the website for Great Legal Marketing, and it looks like it has a good membership. I mean, there are good testimonials, and I think it actually solves the problem. It's very clear about the problem that it solves. Someone who's starting a new practice, who's needing more clients, better systems in place to run or market their law firms. Yeah, I think that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I would highly recommend them to any solo or small firm that's really looking to grow and looking at how to reach out and how to get more clients and what are some effective ways to do that, because they're really helpful, again, on the marketing, but they do a lot more than marketing. It's a lot of mindset. It's a lot of, other aspects of your practice and trying to, if you do just marketing and you do that well, your other systems are going to fail unless you've got them in place to handle the volume of work that's coming in. And they work with the attorneys pretty much from beginning to end on growing their business as well.
Right. Yes. And that's where you mentioned how you are grooming your team to handle some of the delivery work well. So that's aligned with that. So once you do marketing, there's more work. You also have to have systems to make sure that the work is delivering at the same quality and your clients are still satisfied as they were earlier, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you do the marketing, then you've got to convert those leads into into clients, and then you've got to, you know, handle the volume of work for the clients and make sure that they're happy. And so, yeah, there's a lot more, you know, like I said, the marketing's just the first step. You've got to build all the systems in your firm to handle the increased volume that results from the hopefully the influx of calls and inquiries from new clients that the marketing generates.
Perfect. That sounds really good. Rick, my last question would be about managing existing customers, like in your case, it's fairly the you know, a part of like the fractional IP council model that kind of ensures that there's a continuity of business from the clients that you onboard. But any other approaches that you follow to make sure that your customers are retained for a longer period of time?
Yeah, well, again, that's a good question and something that we try and keep in regular contact with our clients, whether it's through, again, we've got a monthly newsletter that goes out. I do a blog post that we push out on social media. So regular clients are going to hear from us at least once a month when the newsletter comes out. So that gives that top of mind awareness that, hey, we're out here. If you need something, you know, we'll send them other things, you know, from time to time. If we come across an article or an opinion or something that's come out recently that pertains to them, we'll just kind of shoot them a quick email, letting them know, hey, this is something that may affect your business in particular. And, you know, just networking in general, reaching out and calling and having lunch with a client, and just, you know, even if there's nothing going on, a client or former client, just to see how they're doing.
Perfect. Great. Thank you so much, Rick. It was a real pleasure listening to your story and the answers to various questions that you shared about bringing in new clients, growing their business, how one has to be working towards marketing, but at the same time also building a team or a system to deliver the work and keep the customer satisfied. I think our listeners will really benefit from listening to this podcast. And I believe some of them might want to reach out to you. So if it would be great if you'd like to share the coordinates at which they can reach out to you.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, thanks for having me on. It's been a pleasure talking with you here today. Like I said, I hope, you know, someone out there finds at least a part of this useful and something that they can take and use to help grow their practice or benefit their clients in some way. If anybody does want to reach out to me, the best place, our website, www.ipsolutionslaw.com. And then my email is just Rick, R-I-C-K, at ipsolutionslaw.com. Probably the best ways to get in touch with us. So if anybody has any questions or would like to, you know, kind of talk to me further about anything that we discussed here, I'd be happy to speak with them.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Rick. It was a real pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the podcast, How to Run and Grow Your Solo Patent Practice, with your hosts, Anant Kataria and Fez Wahid from Sagacious IP. If you enjoyed this episode, please do rate it and listen to more episodes in the series. For more information about supporting your practice with external resources, write to us at info@sagaciousresearch.com. Please do note that the contents of this podcast were intended for general informational purposes only. The views of the guests and hosts were their personal views and do not represent Sagacious IP. The facts of every legal matter are unique, and the content of this podcast should not be considered as offering legal advice for your specific legal situation. The preceding information may be considered attorney advertisement and does not establish an attorney-client relationship.